Yes, it's Koen der Haag.
It's an impossible to pronounce it for Macedonians. Don't worry, it's Koen ter Heegde. That's the full
Koen
name.
Koen ter Heegde.
Yes, yes. Even for Dutch people, it's a difficult name. It's a weird name from the east of the Netherlands. I grew up like half an hour from the German border, and my parents still live there. And I think it's a regional thing.
Yeah. So
I should have much earlier already just taken a Macedonian name.
That would be easier to understand, yeah, for sure. So, like, the region where you come from, is there something, I mean, specific or why? Because of the names, I mean, why there are specific names there?
Oh,
right?
Yeah. What people don't realize about the Netherlands, because, of course, it's a very small country and very overpopulated country as well. I mean, I think there's now 18 million people living in the Netherlands.
It's really too much.
Is a country of regions and provinces, which have very often also their own dialects and very strong sense of cultural identity. So we, for instance, in the north, you have the provinces of Friesland and Groningen, and Friesland has their own language even. It's Frisian is completely different than Dutch. And where I come from, let's say, is a bit more Germanic, Twente, the eastern part of the country, Twente.
Yeah, so, I mean, and then you realize that it's the same situation here, you know, like with dialects and all those stuff.
So was that
the reason why you actually started, you know, coming? I mean, what started pushing you towards here first? Yeah. Because, like, I mean, okay, we didn't do it in the introduction. You know, you are running an organization, let's say, Yugo Futurism. Or, I mean, how will we define it? Is that...
I can explain. It's like I consider it a platform for booking and promotion. It's also my company now, so all the other things that I do in music, I put under this umbrella. But I started coming to the region, I think the first time was in 2003, to Belgrade with friends, because a lot of my friends at university, we were living in Groningen, in the north. It's quite a famous university city. Several of my friends were specializing in Eastern European studies. And one of them, Guido, still a very good friend of mine, he lived also in Serbia for a while, and he speaks the language. But we were starting to do organizing trips to this region. And for me, at one point, it automatically, because with everything I do is quite personal, the projects, I started combining my work in music. I run an independent record label in the Netherlands with a friend of mine called Subroutine. We released about, I don't know, 120 records of 50 mostly Dutch acts. At one point, yeah, I don't know, this is kind of an organic process with me that it started to make sense to also get involved in music and bringing bands from the Netherlands to the Balkans and the other way around, but on a very horizontal and reciprocal level. I am very anti-music industry. I want to represent something that is honest and maybe gloriously naive, but that it's not this kind of colonial music industry that comes to the Balkans and starts telling people here how to run their own clubs or what kind of music they have to make. And then over the years, and like in 2011, I had the opportunity to do this voluntary service, EVS, and I chose to go to Skopje. Funnily enough, I chose Skopje because it was the city that I didn't know at all from all the other capitals, because I spent some time in Ljubljana and in Sarajevo, Belgrade a lot. So I chose to come to Skopje, and I was supposed to also learn better Macedonian than I do now, because I speak very shitty Macedonian. But I lived in Kizela Voda for 8 months, and that obviously kickstarted my connection also with the local music scene and made a lot of friends. Zmejko from La Caña, I know from those days because he offered me to DJ in the bar, and people like Vasco from Berlinese Propaganda, Dvaz Prvivek, I know from those times. Idris from blah blah blah
blah blah blah. Local legends. Yeah, all the local legends you were supposed to know back then.
Idris came with blah 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 to the Netherlands. I did a small tour with them in, I forgot, okay, it's a long time ago. I think it's like 2010 or something, maybe. But it's still a friend. I met his family. It was great to see him actually also here on PIN. I saw him yesterday.
Yeah, great. It's great. So that's how your love towards... I mean, this region started at all, right?
It's a forever fascination, I guess, with the culture, with the hospitality, with...
Yeah, and what's happening with the other places, you know, because, like, let's say Yugo-Futurism is towards ex-Yugoslavia, but it's towards Eastern Bloc.
It is, I mean, of course, the name refers to your nostalgia, but then the other way around. For me, it means something, but like I said, it's very organic and personal, but it represents something to treasure, like the heritage of architecture, of music that exists in the Western Balkans, but not the toxic side of things and the bullshit and the politics, you know? So, because quite easy to get, I don't have to tell you, it's quite easy to get lost in politics here in the Balkans. And when I send a band here, I give them usually a workshop, because bands in Western Europe forgot how borders work.
And when they come here
on tour, they really need to know that they should behave on the right moments. But one of the things I always says, never, never, never go into discussions here with people after the show about either history, empires, ethnicity, or politics, because it's quite easy to get lost or to get into some forever argument with people. I enjoy also to send musicians and younger artists here, because I know how I also, and this is big words, but how I grew as a human in because of this region, what I learned, what I treasured, my character in because of.
Yeah, that was my next question, like how it made you as a person, this place, like is it a better or I mean better or worse, it's irrelevant, but how is it, how things work, of you course, know, for you?
Of course, it's also in a way a bit dualistic, because I come here a lot in Kosovo and Macedonia mostly. I have many friends in Pristina as well. But of course, the fact is that I have a passport in from the Netherlands. So for me, it's easy to come and go how I please. And I know it's also, especially for Kosovars, it's terribly frustrating because they need visa for everything. And there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of bullshit. So I have this privilege. But the thing is, I feel for me, Skopje is like a second home. Really, it feels like that. I know where to go. I know where to go after midnight. I know where to get the best lahmacun in Czarsia.
The secrets. So yeah, it's cool. And then why what about the other, like ex-Yugoslavia? What's happening there? Like, because you are also like often there. I mean, you spend probably more time here or in Netherlands.
Not true. But I mean, yes, I come here a lot also because it's also for holidays and just to enjoy, you know, but for the rest, I think so, especially Macedonia, Kosovo currently is something that I spend a lot of time in, also because I can stay at friends' houses and whatever, and it's easy connecting flights from Eindhoven in the Netherlands to Skopje.
Yeah,
but for the
rest,
I think I went to the Changeover Festival in Belgrade in October, and I work a lot with the Ment Festival in Ljubljana.
Yeah.
Miran, who is also here at PIN, Miran Rusjan.
Yeah.
Who also runs the Moonly label. We have worked together on a lot of different projects. Also me inviting Repetitor, Jean, Bernese Propaganda to the Netherlands. And he also helping me out with shows in Ljubljana, in Metalkova. So there's something that's like, more than a decade of friendship and working together on various projects. And I mean, I have similar with Gerga from Mokotsa.
It's working that way, you know. So like, it's cool to have it there, but how, so for example, you're now on PIN, how you all started collaborating, you know, like at the point, how it all started, you know?
I think, and we were talking about it before when we were walking here, there is this moment when we started traveling here with my friends from the history students, specialized in music studies later. And well, there was a point, I think 2007, 2008, when we were applying for some European subsidies to organize festivals in the region. And the Balkan Streets Festivals, they were called, were aimed to organize in multi-ethnic periphery. So we went to places that were on a post-conflict region. Of course, obviously. So we did festivals in Vukovar, Croatia. We did festival in Tešanje, Bosnia, which is also on very close to the border between Federation and the Republika Srpska. We did festival in Vranje, in Gnilane, Gjilan, Kosovo, and Kumanovo. And Kumanovo was the biggest one because back then, two of my close friends were living in Kumanovo. So they organized that festival while they were there. And it became something that returned for 3 or 4 years, I think, to Kumanovo, and the one in Vranje also got. And of course, at one point, either the money runs out or there's no more energy or people leave. That is always a problem. Even the one in Tešanje, I have very warm memories of that. It's this very small town in Eastern Bosnia, but the organizer, Zorait Mihicic, is still, because he still rocks hard, is this like elderly old rocker. as a local legend with long gray hair and the biggest record collection of Yugo rock that I've ever seen. And the festival we organized on the castle, this enormous Ottoman castle. And you have to use this cultivator to drag all these instruments and all this shit off the castle. But it was those moments in Kumanovo and Vranje that where I came as co-organizer, and I did some workshops with local kids, but that's also how I met Ilya Duni, the musician from Petrol, and Grupa T. That's how I know Idris from blah, blah, blah. They played at the festival. And from there, you know, if things come together, like I said, it grows organically. And Yugo Futurism, for me, also is a very personal thing. It's who I am, what I do, what I believe in. So it's also very independent, aims to provide also a counter narrative for the awful music industry, because I believe in building relationships with people. You do not want to know how many emails I get on a yearly basis from like British music agencies, whether I can send them some Excel file with all my contacts in the Balkans, because they also want to send bands here, because every band wants to come to the region to perform. But I don't want to send every band here, because for me, it's important that people also understand and learn something when they're here. And this is what draws me back and keeps me grounded. And I see it also with some of the younger musicians that I sent. For instance, The Homesick, a trio from the Netherlands, they played, I think a month ago, also a show outside in La Caña. And the guitar player of the band, well, actually now they don't play guitars anymore, it's more electronic, but he actually recorded also an album with Macedonian traditional songs with their Macedonian neighbor in the Netherlands. So it's really like a strong fascination with, I think it's infectious. I mean, I'm very enthusiastic. So, and I, as you can hear, I talk a lot, so.
Yeah, cool. Cool. It's cool to hear somebody, you know, having that many fascinations from here. You know, I mean, there are actually not many, but there are few people that I know that are kind of fascinated, and they have come and stayed, you know. Like, and then there is something like a similar story, you know.
Sure.
It's nice to hear that from nice people, you know, and then it's nice to hear that somebody has activated and pushed a little bit further with helping bands when he gets home.
A lot about it, is, of course, is also because I was frustrated in the Netherlands and in the Western European music infrastructure with all the still existing stereotypes when it comes to music from Central and Eastern Europe or the Balkans. It's still strongly rooted in this dualistic Cold War way of thinking. And people, even though Dutch people came to Yugoslavia for holidays very early. It was one of the most popular destinations to go to Croatian Riviera.
I think Ohrid is still popular, but mostly for, you know, people that are, you know, in retirement.
Yeah, exactly. There is still the gray zone that flies there, you know.
There is
a statue of, or not a statue, like a plaquette of a Dutch writer who wrote travel novels about Roma families, and it was this exciting. Aden Dolart, there is a whole plaque of him on the lake at Ohrid. And also in school, I think maybe this in a way can explain, it's theoretical, because I mean, there's many facets that influence it. But of course, I was very young when the Yugoslav War happened in the 90s. I'm born in 1981, so yeah, you can count. I was like, and a big part of me as a kid collecting Panini stickers for the football teams.
Yeah, for sure.
Did never really understood or why all of a sudden there was no longer the Czechoslovakia or Soviet Union as teams. I remember collecting these stickers and Alexei Mikhailachenko, the later captain of the Ukrainian national team. I think he was playing for four different countries in
really?
in four tournaments. Yeah, yeah. So we have Soviet Union, and then it was this GOS. Commonwealth thing, and then the follow-up, and then Ukraine. And it's a similar thing with Yugoslavia, of course. And we saw it on TV, Sarajevo, Vukovar, we saw it on TV. And of course, the Dutch history with Srebrenica as like the part of the Dutch army that was tasked with guarding the safe area of, this is a national trauma in the Netherlands. We learned that in school, but I never learned about, for instance, about Yugoslavian movies or the music scene in Belgrade and when coming here. And of course, I have this fascination and work in music. And then there is this whole world that opens up, you know, that is not just the movies of Emir Kusturica or the cliches or the bottles of Kokta. No, it's much more. It's like a world that opens up, which is slightly hermetic, I think, by nature, especially also in Macedonia. it's hard to get this information. I mean, Tosho from the bookstore wrote this big book about the history of Macedonian rock music, but it's only in Macedonian.
Well, that's it. There are no translation. But
and of course, then when you start working with Vasco, with Brnez Propaganda, and you start, then you learn about more bands and new bands and this new generation also here in Skopje. What I really like is this energy of this Gola Planina collective.
Yeah, for sure. The
very different kind of bands, but they work in a very cool and DIY way. It's very, very productive and positive, I think.
Yeah. And they're nice that they showed up, and then there are plenty of bands, you know, so because whenever I did shows like this year, like I think that, you know, most of the bands were like the local band, the Macedonian band was one band from the collective, know, so
it was nice to
hear them. And then, like, because we didn't know each other that much, like right now we are getting close, and, you know, seems like great guys, and they work a lot, you know, like
I'm good friends
really
also,
and they're really hyped on doing stuff. So,
you know,
it's
for
nice
me it's interesting
that
I've been coming for more than a decade, and now, because this is relatively new dynamic that they organize themselves, and a band like Lufthansa, I will also definitely try to bring them to the Netherlands for some more tours, because it's great guys, it's fun music, it's a different sound.
And it's nice to have them play.
Yes, and Rade from Lufthansa plays, I think, also in several bands.
Yeah, so all really, of them actually. You know,
it's really a scene.
Of those.
And a music scenes is also, I wrote my master thesis for university about music scenes and this concept of a local ecosystem is something that I find very important. That is something that is strongly connects with my idealism in music, because it's this, everything influences each other, you know, the local record store, the audience, the guy that cooks the dinners for the musicians, and that you have this development now with all these different bands, it's great. It's very positive to see.
It's kind of cool to have that, you know, but it's always not that easy to bring it always, you know, or to let it stay for long, know, so it's kind of breakable thing, you
of
know.
Of course, but
and
fragile,
then,
it is.
Yeah.
Music scenes are very fragile, because you only need one element that stops, the record store stops them, that they're not selling enough records, or someone passes away, or there is some other things that change, and then it changes the entire ecosystem. Of course, it is fragile. But it's positive to see this, because it's a good energy. For instance, the two bands from the Czech Republic that I booked the tour for in the region, and they played Mokica, and on the way home they were supposed to play in Belgrade and Novi Sad, and then the tragedy happened, this school shooting. So the shows in Belgrade was cancelled, because of course it was like 3 days of national mourning. And Marco from the band Harakiri, who I'm in touch with a lot, like in 5 minutes got them an extra show in Tetovo. And for the band, this they later said to me that was one of the most fun shows, you know, because with all due respect to Tetovo, but nothing happens in Tetovo.
Yeah. I know, and I remember that, you know, because I was in touch with Mark also back then, but there was another show happening, you know, that was fully booked in Kumano, you know, so there was that possibility. But yeah, it's nice, and then I always also prefer those local stuffs, you know, that's why I do kind of stuffs in my hometown mostly, you
especially
know,
me. I mean, I don't feel old, but I am 41 and turning 42 next month. It's cool to see this energy with young people, like relatively young people obviously, but this is a kind of this DIY idealism from 80s and 90s, and they do it in their own way, which is great. Because if you are in a music scene with only older people, you get this kind of also this toxicity, which is not always fun.
It depends. I mean, it's kind of funny, because I was used to be the youngest one, you know, always, and then like in the recent year that suddenly changed, you know what I mean? So it's kind of funny for me, that thing too. But I was kind of always like with, you know, let's say older crew and stuff like that. So, and I don't know.
What I hope for is also that that it turns into something which is, it's a bit of a hype word, but sustainable towards also like further development of Skopje. Because of course, like from the moment that I first came here until now, a lot of places for live music are gone. And that's a tragedy, because that's very often it's something like it's easy to lose them, But it's very hard to find new places, and especially in the city, places where you know, where young people can make noise.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
can
the
have
place.
Fun.
Yes, and sure, Skopje has Mukotsa, but it would be much better if, like, a place like what's the name of that old bar on the beginning of Charcia? This now is some kind of shisha restaurant.
Menada.
Menada. I saw what was the Ice Age in the basement of Menada.
Yeah.
Those kind of energies, you know, like and a lot of these places are gone. I mean, La Caña is still there, and I love La Caña. It's very important place for me also, because Zmejko from La Caña was also the one in 2011 when I was living here, and of course I was broke, and he said, "Hey, you can DJ at the bar, and you get some free beers, and we hang out," you know. And it's
his
idealism also towards maintaining a physical space for, like, weird music is very important. And he's, of course, I think his personality is also, he's very autonomous. He doesn't want to take money from anyone, and this is his thing. But I was talking about this with him when I came on Wednesday, because I traditionally always go and DJ at La Caña. It's a fun thing for me to do, and it, you know, bring some of these international delegates throwing some money at the bar. That's never a bad thing. But for instance, that some of these younger music scene people now, the young organizers, the Gola Planina, that also, that they somehow can adopt also a place like La Caña. Because I think this is what is very important and is very often missing. I see it in the Netherlands as well, is this dialogue between, let's say, the older DIY generation from, I don't know, from the 70s, 80s that have been around, and the younger people, because they don't talk. They don't meet each other that often. They live different lives. But it's very relevant for, like, the future.
Yeah, the friendship between those generation, you know.
I grew up in
sending, you know, the stories, you know, the legends further. Sure. Yeah. So
one of the places which is most influential in the way I work, in the passion that I have for music is a bar, Vera, a legendary club in Groningen, where I was a volunteer when I was studying. And Vera has, there's, I think, like 5 or 6 people that get paid, and they have 200 volunteers. And it's also these volunteers from all different generations and all representing all kinds of music, you know, from heavy metal to hip hop. But meeting and working with these people and being part of like an independent community is something that really shapes you. And this is what I mean also.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me now, what's happening in Netherlands toward what we speak about, what we talk about here? We mentioned that the generations doesn't meet each other, but what about the places, the venues,
places,
the bars?
Places are disappearing. It's the same problem, I think, everywhere in Europe. When you look at the situation, for instance, I mean, it was the clearest example, of course, always is Amsterdam. I do many shows there a year, like 10 or 20, I guess, in mostly in a place called Oki. But a lot of places disappeared because of gentrification, because of noise complaints, because of redevelopment, because of our wonderful neoliberal government that stopped funding the culture back in 2008, and a lot of these places are gone, and they're not coming back. And you can see the problematic is because there's more and more bands. I feel there's more bands than ever. Or maybe it's because of Spotify and the other developments that you just notice them now all of a sudden. But when I started organizing concerts, like in 2008, 2009, actively, it was, you did not have to book a tour like a year in advance. And now it's going in that direction. And this is hurting the local scene mostly, because the local bands will not plan a show like a year in advance. You know, that's something that you need to learn. And there's a lot of...
Yeah, it's weird in that way, because everything is going in delays, you know. Yeah. And then...
especially also since the pandemic, it became like this kind of attitude that everybody wants everything now. And this concept of FOMO, fear of missing out, everything got more wild, but also the music industry had already many problems, and the European music infrastructure, but now it's even accentuated it more for me. Also organizing shows in Czech Republic or Slovakia, because one of the biggest problems for me as Jugofuturism, as a booker, is that each country has a different concept of time and planning, let's say like that. So when I organize something in Albania, I can do it maybe 2 weeks in advance, or in Kosovo, but when I organize something in Ljubljana, I have to mail like 6 months in advance, because otherwise Gromka in Metelkova is already booked, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. And then it's going like towards that. And does that actually helps for, let's say, smaller places have more bands, for example, the busyness of the big places, or...
Sure.
I mean, for example, what a band would choose, like a, let's say, nice concert with a nice people, or like I mean nice concert with nice hospitality and nice, I don't know, finances, or the difference, you know, like average.
I mean, you know, that's a very good question. That's a question that I very often ask the bands that I work with, and try to advise them. I started managing a band 2 years ago called Tramhouse from Rotterdam. They ask me. I never saw myself really as a manager, but it's a fun and interesting experience for me. But I very often ask this question to bands. Like, realize that most of the I'm doing this for a long time. Most of the bands only exist for like 5 years. Like, do you want to play the 5 years only in the Netherlands, getting paid good money for the shows, but playing the same venues, the same circle, or do you strive to reach this point, which is, I think, very relevant, this point of autonomy, that you can make your own decisions, decide who you want to work with, where do you want to go on tour. And for sure, of course, because I am interested in helping bands tour in the Western Balkans, of course the fees here, the money here is not on the level of Netherlands or Western Europe. Actually, last tours it was not that bad even, because the bands were really surprised with the turnout. But it's about growth. When you tour in the Balkans, and the Homesick went on a tour, they went from Ljubljana, where Miran from Moonly that I mentioned before helped with the show, they went to Zadar, Nik Djemska or something is
Nik
the name of
them.
Yeah. And then they went to Mostar, Sarajevo, Nikšić, Tirana, Prizren, Pristina, Skopje. And I mean, that is an amazing experience. I think I couldn't, last time that they were on tour, I went with them, but I don't do that often, because also it's very draining, and touring is very hard work. People don't realize
one
that.
once more time on the Balkans, you know, during the year.
No, but I mean, this is, I think it's a great experience to learn about the different regions, to the history, the architect. I mean, I have this fascination with architecture, especially in Skopje. The Gotsad Delcev, Studentski Dom, for instance. Yeah. When I came last year, I spent, I think, 2 hours around the complex making pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And,
nice.
And the post office, that is such a tragedy that there was this fire inside.
Yeah,
because
I
remember, like, in 2011, just going in there just to see the building, but it was super overwhelmingly beautiful. I had to sit down, you know, and look at this frescoes that showed, like, the working class. It is such a bizarre development for me to see, because I feel strongly connected to Skopje, but to see how much the city has changed and still is changing.
Yeah, and it's not paid attention and even care for those stuff.
You know,
all,
like that architecture that exists from the post-earthquake years with the Kenzo Tanga city planning is internationally celebrated. You know, you had this exhibition in the Museum of Modern Art in New York about concrete utopia from Yugoslavia. And this, for me, just the idea that I mean, we don't have to talk about like identity crisis or the Greek connection, blah, blah, but the new buildings on Vardar, in every sense of the word, it's grotesque, you know? And they are already seem to be falling apart as well.
Yeah. I mean, the quality is not a good side of those
really
buildings.
Bizarre. And one of the things I like to do when I show friends around the city is show them, like, for instance, behind it, the Makedonsky Opera and Ballet. That's a really like a gorgeous building. And the telecommunications office, you know, behind the post, and walk around it and see that it was built also with an idealism for people to have a pleasant work in, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Skopje can be slightly hermetic to understand, because a lot of the people I met now that are here for the first time also, yeah, I don't like it here, but it's hard. You have to know where to go. Skopjans, they don't realize that the shortcuts that they take or the routes that they walk for a tourist are impossible to find out. For instance, going to that place Kotur,
yeah.
You will never find it because it's hidden.
Yeah.
And that whole area before, in front of it, I was at Kotur with Vasco last year. That whole area in front of it, there's a whole story, but it was an important place for the punk rock scene back in the days, and people were hanging out. And you have this very famous building on the right side of that square in front of Kotur. But that is not a place that you will easily find if you are here for the first time. The same, like the big exoskeleton apartment blocks just outside of the center, with the small parks in the middle, you know, where the pensioners can smoke their cigarettes or eat their nuts and drink coffee and talk.
It's, play chess.
It's very idealist in that way. But people, when people on the internet, because there is, of course, this big hype, when they think about brutalism, they only think about darkness, about like this poverty, concrete, cold. But if you spend time in Novi Belgrad or in Skopje and you visit the neighborhoods, you see that it's completely different. It's very green. It's green. There's an ecosystem behind it. There is pekara, apteka. Everything is nice and organized. There's a market. There is a whole social ecosystem that was made and designed to help the people. It's idealistic. And this is what I'm trying to also explain to people when I give them city tours. Not every neighborhood is like that here, but like when you speak about Kizela Voda, where I used to live, or Debar Malo or Aerodrome, I mean, it's this, or Vasco's neighborhood and Idris' neighborhood, George Petrov, maybe even stronger in George.
Yeah.
it's like a village in a city, you know? And it's for me, it's fun to see and to discover it. Every time I learn something new when I come to Skopje.
Yeah, and then you find it really interesting and funny, and that's why you...
I find it beautiful, and it feeds me. It gives me energy also, because I am interested in it. So it's something that it's part of who I am.
Yeah, and what's the usual feedback of the people that you suggest those? And you tell these stories too, you know, what's the usual feedback?
I don't know. I don't expect everybody to share the love and passion for Skopje or Macedonia. But I think at least if you're only here for 2 days and I can show you some things or take you in Čačija and show you Kapanan and Bezisten and Galeria Sedum and have a Lahmacun there and listen to the Azan coming from seven sides. Have a drink at La Caña, finding Kursumli An, that's always a big problem for me.
Yeah.
It's very hard to
find.
Yeah, it's
big even for me, you know, because I'm also from...
And then seeing the ecosystem.
I just know the places and the road to there, you know, it's always harder for me to, you know,
and
to look.
Bit Bazaar, of course, but also to explain, you know, like the multi-ethnicity, which is a big part of the Macedonian demographics, and to explain the older and recent history of Čačija and how it represents also the city, and it changes, because we were talking about this bar that disappeared, Menada. But I also remember in Bezisten in 2011 there were three or four bars and they're all gone now, and now the Čačija is more catering mostly, I think, to Turkish tourists, so there is almost no places with alcohol left. It's a lot of coffee places, a lot of shisha bars, and
something like that. Yeah. I mean, I the last five times I have been to Čačija were just to La Caña and back.
Yeah,
you know, so I also don't follow what's happening mostly.
I mean,
you know, when I started coming to Skopje, it was kind of this way. Maybe it was even worse, but it was more like post-war thing. And then, like, because I know that my generation was, like, somebody was telling, hey, don't be mad, you can hang around there, you know, like, it's okay to hang around, you know, nobody.
Of course, the cha-cha represents also the ethnic tensions that exist and still exist.
For sure. And then, like, after that, let's say 2008 or 9 was maybe, I don't know, the revival, maybe a few years even later, you know, something like that. Then it started being cool. And then now again, it's not, let's say, that bad, but because earlier, there were not even any kind of bars or places. It was more like dark place and stuff like that.
I remember when there was a time also when Macedonians would not join me to cha-cha because they had the idea that it was not safe for them. And of course, I am a foreigner and tourist. Like I don't have that. And I have many Albanian friends as well. So yeah, it's...
The
Stara Church of Skopje, I mean, in many ways, is also one of the only places where you can still make noise because there's not many people living there. There's a lot of hotels now, bizarre amount of hotels. When I arrived, I had to pick up taxi and they dropped off some people at some hotel, and you can see like there's a new hotel every 100 meters now around Čačak. It's getting a bit ridiculous, to be honest.
Yeah, it may be just like, you know, restaurants, the bars, the stuff like that, and hotels. But
I mean, it's how it is. I think it happens almost everywhere where there is like a tourist industry. It's almost unavoidable. And there is, of course, one thing about hotels is the best way for corruption.
yeah, for sure. And tell me, let's go back to the topic comparing the Balkans, the Macedonia, Netherlands towards music. What's happening, for example? What's happening, for example, about the Netherlands small places, how they run, about the cultural center? I mean, are their cultural centers working, you know, like, or the bars, stuff like
in,
that?
In Netherlands?
I'm talking about small, like, smaller places, not so, let's say, tourist place and stuff like that.
The music infrastructure of the Netherlands, they used to call that the club circuit, is traditionally very well organized. You know, every city, every shithole has their own like music club. And most of them, they come from the time of squats. So they come from 60s, 70s, where people started organizing stuff, and they turned over the decades into like a professional organization with a board and with fees and money and subsidies. What the recent development, and it's not something that I'm happy with, or I think it's a very sad direction, is that it becomes like this thing for politicians also to leave their mark. So they built like these terrible square concrete modern music venues that with like an escalator in it, and it looks like a shopping mall, you know, and because it's prestigious, they have a big music club, a big cultural center. But of course, I mean, sure, call me old fashioned, but I like scruffy places. I like the old squats. I feel at home. Like for me also to be here in the studio of Stotrojka is something like...
Yeah, being at home.
It doesn't smell, but it smells like history. There is a lot here, you know. And buildings like this breathe, and they have an identity. And I think one of the problems of it's not just in the Netherlands, is a European problem. Arnold sings about this in with the X, with the Dutch band Soon All Cities. It's the opening track of, I think, the last album. Soon all cities will have the same restaurants. Soon all cities will have the same roundabouts, have the same accidents. European cities start looking like each other more, and more gray, more abstract. And what I like and what I find here in the Balkans is like a specific identity, you know, a specific history, something that is different. And sure, I mean, that's not just here. It's everywhere. It's not always perfect, but at least it's humane and it's organic. And there is an energy that I like. For instance, one of the places I organized or helped organize a couple concerts recently is the venue Thermokis in in Pristina.
Pristina, yeah.
And for bands, this is a fun place, you know. That's a very idealistic young community. And then the next day they can play in Kino Lombardi in Prizren, which is one of the oldest outdoor movie cinemas in former Yugoslavia. And you play in that building. It's really cool.
yeah, for sure. For whoever wants to, you know, experience that.
And then Prizren in general, I mean, it's a wonderful city.
I have been
city.
For the first time there this year, actually. And then I had, like, great time, you know.
It's the best burek of the Balkans. On Shadrvan Square, you have this burek Sarajeves. Oh, uh-huh. Man. If I think about it, I taste it already.
Wow. Yeah, nice. It's nice to have this kind of person, you know, talking stuff.
I have my rituals also in Skopje. So it's the Lahmacun, it's the Lakanya, but also to go to walk to specific places, it's keeps me grounded, you know. Then I know where I am again.
Cool. So the reason now you're here is the PIN conference, right? So tell me first how these conferences are helping or trying to help the bands, the promoters. What's the advantages? What's the disadvantages? You know, what's the usual point, you know?
It's a showcase festival.
Yeah, it's kind of a regularly new thing, you know, when many of the people, I mean, they are all starting now to get familiar here with what's happening, but...
Definitely. Now every country has a showcase festival. Some have several even. But showcase festivals exist to showcase, literally, to explore newly emerging acts, both domestically and internationally. But specifically, they invite international music industry delegates to come to the city to meet each other. To meet the local scene, the local organizers, to network, to create partnerships, and basically to provide opportunities for the artists that they represent or the venues that they work for. And PIN, and one of the reasons I like coming to PIN also is that, as with many things in Skopje, it's completely like it represents login.
Yeah,
as the director of Password, like already with all the name jokes and the irony and the constant cynical emails that we received about the program, PIN is very unique in the way that they focus also on this larger region. So there is Bulgarians coming from Svetan Svetanov is here from Sofia, from Punk Alarma. And there's Turkish delegates. And you don't meet them on other showcase festivals. They come here because they have an existing relationship with Login or with his organization. But PIN, and of course also because of Mukatse, and everything happens in the same building. It's quite easy to see a lot of bands. You meet everyone because everybody's hanging around Mukatse the whole day. And with the showcase festivals, there is always this part of the conference. So there is panels where international delegates meet locals and they discuss new developments in the music industry or on distribution of online music, all any kind of subjects are discussed in 3 days, and then in the evening there are concerts. That's the usual way a showcase festival works. And in the Western Balkans, you have several. One of my favorites is MENT in Ljubljana, because I really like their program, the way they curate. They always have really amazing new bands. But now in Belgrade you have two. Croatia this year had the first edition of the Ship Festival in Šibenik. So yeah, it's part of a larger development in the European music industry around the idea of export. So to export your bands, your talents to new markets, new audiences, and you use a showcase festival to provide these new opportunities for the acts from your country. This is how it works.
Yeah, and Does it actually works in practice since now, you know?
It really depends on which showcase festival. Some are more successful than others, but I have discovered 3 or 4 new acts from Macedonia at PIN. Lufthansa, Zarina Prva Zvezda, Peria, and Dvazd Prvi Vek. I mean, I knew Vasco, but this was the first time I saw them live, I think, when they played last year. So it in the way that, for me personally, yes, it works, because I did not know these acts before. I know them now, and perhaps on one of the events that I organize in the Netherlands or a festival, I can invite them or create something for them. Sure. And I think in general, for me, the reason to come to, because I go to quite a lot of these kinds of events, is because it's a way for me also to connect with my own network. As I mentioned before, Yugo Futurism is a very personal platform, and I feel strongly connected to the people that I work with. So meeting them on events like this also keeps this ongoing dialogue and friendship with, because very often it turns from professional into a friendship, that I can meet them several times during the year, and usually it also creates new ideas for tours, for festivals.
Yeah, and apart from this region, let's say, what else are you, I mean, are you concentrated on other bands, or this is your primary? I mean, what's the percentage? What's the relation? You decide to work, you know?
My record label is used to, I think we used to do more, much more releases also, but we just changed the tempo also, because that exists as a idealistic also alternative to support bands. There is no profit also in the record label. Everything that comes in is reinvested into new releases or new merchandise. Yugo Futurism became, I think, yeah, it's pretty much now most of my work comes from it. So in the Netherlands, I organize, I'm involved with several festivals. I started my own festival, Weekenditsa, this year for the first time, to also create a new platform. Like it's a traveling circus of bands that go through 3 different venues in 1 weekend. But it's very cool also to see the interaction between the musicians, because when they spend so much time in 3 days together, they influence each other, which I like this development. It is pretty much what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you mentioned Weekenditsa. So what's that actually? How it started? And
This is what I just said.
No, I mean, not about the festival. I was thinking, was that something earlier before that or no?
I was looking for a name for the festival, and I always like this, the term Weekenditsa, also because it transcends languages, because also the Albanians also call it Weekenditsa.
Yeah.
And it's a fun word, I think, also. I started it, the first edition was in September. Next year it will be in October. Also aiming to every time bring an act also from Western Balkans. This year I invited Vladimir Lenhardt, Lenhardt Tapes.
Yeah, I know. We did actually an interview in this podcast like 2-3 months ago.
Very, very cool artist.
More than that.
A very interesting personality as well. The stories about his father, who is a musician as well. Or his grandfather, I think.
Grand, yeah.
That's very cool. And his shows also, I like the way that works. Like the first half an hour, he's almost fighting with himself.
Yeah.
And then when he gets into it, he gets really into it. Yeah. So it was nice. That's also an artist that I saw for the first time at PIN. And then I saw them again in Kvaka Dvaz Dva in Belgrade on a project. And then I knew, okay, this is definitely someone that I would like to invite to come for some shows in the Netherlands, because it's very refreshing what he does.
Yeah.
And unique.
Yeah, it's always nice to hear that those things work. But do you connect your work with bands, concerts, with your label, and how the label actually works? Because we didn't mention that much.
Subroutine is a we started it back when we were studying, and we were working in Vera, the music club in Groningen, and we started with 3, and after a couple of years, the third person had started an art gallery, so he quit the label. Subroutine works as a platform basically to support new music as well. There is no financial reasons behind it. It's not an economic thing. Everything that comes in is reinvested, and we try to work with like adventurous new acts from the Netherlands. We did some international acts, but we know that also with the limited amount of time, we can make the biggest impact working with Dutch acts, and that is the whole reason to run the label. So it's adventurous guitar music. That is what Subroutine does, and that goes from post-punk to punk and noise rock. And we, like I said, we released something like 120 plus releases of like 50, 60 bands already. So we've been going for a long time, and in the Netherlands, we have our own niche and community. We sell enough records to keep it going, and it's like a full-time hobby.
Yeah, but so you release it on like what format do you release?
Everything. Usually it's vinyl. And in the last years we started an imprint for cassettes, because I really like cassettes. I'm a big fan of tapes. No, it usually is vinyl. Also, all musicians want vinyl in the Netherlands. CDs are not so cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's happening, but I was just checking what's going on. And you mentioned that at one point the digital distribution and stuff, that, like in the conferences and stuff. How does that work? Because, like, I don't know, I have recently realized it growing, but I think that it's very recent thing, you know? So what do you think about...
I mean, it's a revolution from the last 20 years, and now most of the money that's being made in the music industry is because of like DSPs, digital service providers, like Spotify, like Bandcamp or iTunes and all these kind of things. For us with the label, we work with a platform based in London, State 51. So when we have a new release, we collect the artwork and the WAF, the original studio tracks. You fill in an online form where you explain all the details and the rights and the title and everything. It's very specified. Metadata is the word.
Yeah, metadata.
And then they provide the service for us that they uploaded it to, like, I don't know, 100 different channels internationally from everywhere in the world. And we get a monthly like a receipt from them with how many plays we had and how much money. And then they take a percentage of the... of what comes in.
Yeah, and could the band count actually on those incomes? You know I mean? How it works?
We don't really deal with acts that are like... we don't like million selling acts.
I know, but that was my point. How is it? Is it growing? It's not a big deal how much, but is it going? Should it be better in the future? You know, stuff like that. It was more like...
It's a fact of life now. Young people consume new music via online media. That's how it is. And for some music, it's bigger than for others. I think guitar music still has a strong physical release connection. Electronic music is much more online. With us, with the label, we have the deal that pretty much with all the bands that we work with, that everything is 50-50. So we split the investment, and I think 9 out of 10 times after a couple of years, we're on zero, and it's okay like that, you know? Like nobody's really making money, but we provide the opportunity for them to release this album, and we do the media campaign, the press release, we try to get them in the newspaper, to get the album reviewed. And me personally, that became more and more important for me is the live thing. So I try to help them also get shows outside of... the Netherlands, to get them to maybe play a showcase festival to reach a more international audience.
Yeah, so that was my point. Are those things that you do, shows, festivals, and the label intercept at some point, you know?
Everything, yeah, definitely. No, everything, is like in concentric circles, with me, it's all happening at the same time. It's schizophrenic, but it's how it is. So the label, Hugo Futurism, my work in management, it's very organically linked. It's just who I am, I think.
Yeah, cool. Well, if there is something that we didn't talk about, I mean, I realize that this can be a really, really long podcast if we let it go, you know what I mean? But it's nice always, you know, so if there is something more that you want to talk about, just, you know, tell me, because like we did this interview, we arranged this interview really quickly, actually, since like, I don't know, in the 10 hours or some in the last 10 hours or something like that.
No, for me, like I said, it's a big pleasure to visit you, and especially to visit Stotrojka, the one and one of the oldest independent radios, and this building is amazing. So for me, this is fun to do.
Yeah.
To get out of Mokotów for an hour and sit down. And it's this when you talk about ecosystem, when you talk about Skopje as a zine, Stotrojka is extremely relevant still. Maybe they don't have the same amount of listeners as they did 30 years ago, but the fact that it exists and that people like you and Georgi Janeski that they still make these programs is very relevant. That's one of the foundational pillars of a scene.
Yeah, for sure. And it's fun, actually, for me as a person from another city, it's fun to have a place to get in and do a radio show, you know, in the national building, you know, stuff like that. So it's always interesting. And then, but the sad thing is that it's based only on that enthusiasm, on that interesting thing, you know. Yeah, what I mean? And then it's kind of like,
it's
not
hard,
that strong as always, you know.
Yeah, it's a fragile ecosystem. That's what you said before, and it's very true. It depends on the energy and passion of few people, and you can see it like in whether it's in Amsterdam or whether it's in Skopje, when things happen that change the dynamic, it has results for everything else as well.
Yeah, well, we started with that, actually. It was in the beginning, so we'll end with that fragile ecosystem, because
that's how it is. Music scenes.
Yeah, it was nice having you.
Thanks.
So, and nice meeting you too. So have a nice time at the PIN conference, and hope that we'll see each other soon, you know, again.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.